Hello, everyone. My name is Taylor.
And I'm Kelly.
And we are the co-hosts of Jumping Bomb Audio, the number one show all about the world of Joshi Pro Wrestling. Episodes drop every other Monday, where we discuss the biggest Joshi news, review shows, and preview the hottest upcoming Joshi action.
So whether you're a new fan or an old fan, we've got something here for you at Jumping Bomb Audio.
Check us out on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Do you like professional wrestling? Well, we like professional wrestling too. This is Shake Them Ropes. I am Jeff Hawkins. I am fully immersed in the wrestling bubble. He is Chris Novembrino. He wants nothing to do with it. It's happy living though, isn't it?
It's happy living? Oh, yeah. I mean, they always told me that ignorance was bliss, and I used to call them stupid, but now...
No, they're right.
It's great. I don't know what is going on generally. And I just get told about stuff and I say things like, gee, that sounds bad. Or, oh, wow. Or, oh, man, that's going to be neat.
So that's an explanation.
And then it happens.
Yeah.
And then it doesn't, or it doesn't happen. And in either case, I move on with my life.
That's the explanation of a show on Voices of Wrestling that actually happens.
Used to close caption professional wrestling for broader context. Yeah, for years, including WrestleMania. I actually do have a resume, but it doesn't really matter, and you'd never get a sense of it listening to this show.
I am. I may clip that for our teaser that goes before other shows, just as we can get more of an audience that way. I'm going to actual rehab for not the booze rehab, the physical rehab.
I was just saying, are we both the programs now?
No. My name is Jeff. I have a torn rotator cuff. Hi, Jeff. I got exposed to. Have you ever been exposed to the Theragun Pro before?
The Theragun?
Yes, the Theragun.
Is this like a Mega Man Buster adapter thing?
It looks like a space age laser gun, because it's just a triangle with a little attachment on, with a little ball that goes like really fast, and they use it to massage you, and or athletes have it and stuff like that. I had never been exposed to one of these things before, and I got mocked by the guy doing it because it was painful to me. He goes, "You've never had a massage before?" I go, "No, I've never had a massage before. Not even in a relationship or whatever." I go, "No.
I've been denied the touch of a woman for a very long time, well, sir. Next question."
Well, even when I was in relationships, they weren't that spend that much time with each other time in some way. So I guess you have a point there, Chris. This is going to turn to therapy quicker than I thought. So let's move on. No.
Today on Shake Them Thoughts.
Well, I just sneezed 12 times, so I'm now sick officially, I guess. It was just one of those things where I instantly have a cold. And I was going to talk about that, but I just mentioned it to you before the show, and then we talked about it. So I don't know.
Well, and I'm recovering.
What do you want to say here?
Sick.
Okay, I have nothing interesting.
No, I got something. So this morning I wake up and I am checking my email because I'm becoming more responsible.
Which cat is that?
That's Chesterfield.
Get him the hell out of here.
No, I'm not going to get him the hell out of
here. I hate cats.
Oh my God. So I guess we go a different route.
No, let's go the other route. It's probably more interesting.
No, the my internet almost getting canceled. No,
what?
My neighbor moved out. And they live in Unit A. I live in Unit B, which are not connected or anything like that. And they're two separate accounts. But Xfinity is not very smart when it comes to processing this stuff. So somehow they managed to process this to where my internet was going to be disconnected today. So I open up the email and I'm like, oh, it's like, we got your cancellation request. It will be going through today. And I was like, oh, good. I get to drink coffee and get on the phone with Xfinity. And so I then called Xfinity. And let me tell you, they have the worst phone tree of any phone tree I have encountered.
In that's a bold statement, because phone trees these days are bad everywhere.
In terms of trying to keep you from speaking to a real human, this one is damn good at it, Jeff. Like it was like a video game. Because I there were several rounds that I lost where I got locked into the tree and there was no getting out of it. At one point, it even teased me where it was like, you could speak to a live agent. There'll be a wait. That wait will be 3 minutes. And I go, I'll wait. I will wait. And it goes, or we could do the text option. I'm going to text you right now this link. Please click the link. Or I can resolve this myself. So I was doing this song and dance in the phone tree for what seemed like 30-something minutes. Finally get on the line with the call center person, eventually after I master the phone tree. And of course, our call center person does not necessarily understand the acute nuances of American problems. For example, Jeffrey, I was informing this person that New Mexico is in fact a state in the United States of America and not in fact part of Mexico, and that I had not moved to Mexico, but that I was in fact in New Mexico.
I'm on the lam, ma'am. Understand.
Yeah. Oh, you're in Mexico. No, New Mexico.
What's your name? Arkansas Dave Rudaba. No.
What city? Albuquerque. It's the largest city in New Mexico, which is a state in the country of the United Lord. States.
Say
yeah,
no.
More. Yeah, good. No. So that was like 80 minutes of my life. Also, I had a puppy for like about a day. And let me tell you, anyone who ever tells me that four cats is a handful, I've had a puppy. I can't get off your jag now. I've now dealt with puppy poop and puppy pee and puppy drama. And one day.
I will take a puppy over cats, though.
Hawkins, I will unleash multiple cats on you instead of a puppy.
Well, if you're interested in Jeff Hawkins possibly going to war with the Voices of Wrestling flagship, this is the show for you this week.
we've been a sleeper cell on this network since its inception. Lanza needed to have a nemesis, and today the mask comes off and it's Jeffrey Hawkins.
Actually, I think I'm feuding with Rich because Rich and I disagree on one news item that I have here, and then they're plugging their live flagship tonight with, well, Dynamite wasn't a good show. I was like, I thought that Dynamite was pretty damn spectacular for the most part, or at least really good. We just like different things. Okay, great. Here we go. In the news,
you're going for Rich. Then I'm gonna just before you begin here, put Joe Lanza officially on notice.
Okay, good.
You're on notice, Joe.
No, I'm not putting Rich on notice. I love Rich. Come on.
But no.
I'm not gonna play.
You're gonna weenie out of this now.
I'm probably gonna weenie out.
Okay. So you're gonna Mott and Bailey me and leave me in the moat.
Pretty much. Here we go.
Whatever. Lance is still on notice.
Okay. Cool. I'll help. Wrestlers deciding to talk about things that they can't really talk about, and then getting through with just gobbledygook. Will people please hire PR experts, please, or not say anything at all?
No, stop hiring PR experts.
Oh, is that what this problem was? Okay.
If we're talking about John Cena, John Cena is the byproduct of too much focused market research, not enough humaning. Just be an effing human.
I agree with the not enough humaning. It feels like they put a bunch of aspirational posters from, you know, the sharper image into his head, and that's all he can put out there. So here we go. He goes on Howard Stern, and this is what he says about the Vince McMahon case. Quote, I don't think it's complicated to talk about. it's complicated to listen to. That's why I don't necessarily put a lot of time and equity into it. There's still a long way to go. If someone's behavior lies so far outside your value system, the balance shifts of, quote, I can't operate in a world where this works, unquote. That's the end result of being accountable. Right now,
what does that quote mean? I don't understand. I have read that sentence so many times, and I do not have a clue.
I will take a guess at it as soon as I finish the quote. Sure. Right now, I'm going to love the person I love, be their friend. I love you. You have a hill to climb. Yeah, this is the type of person who says he's spiritual but not religious and then tries to figure out some sort of moral ethos in there in some way and doesn't quite get there. Look, I can't operate in a world where this works. Basically, what he's saying is I can't comprehend of somebody actually doing something like this. So instead, he just decides to love the person. Weak sauce here by John Cena, where the man who can't admit Taiwan's a country. I can't comment on this. It's
love
that
the
easy.
Sinner, but not the sin.
Yes.
Only like it in a way, like a similar construction to this.
But it's not admitting there's a sin there. It's saying,
right.
Well, I can't comprehend of somebody actually doing sex trafficking in this company. So
right.
I'm just going to put out, I'm going to get rid of those negative vibes right now. I'm going to think of puppies and unicorns and the man that I think he is. So it's like,
right. No. See, that's what I'm saying. Like, he obviously gets that sex trafficking is bad. That's why he has to do the dance. And that's good. I applaud him for understanding that.
Are we sure he gets that sex trafficking in his bed?
You know what, Jeff? I want to give him the benefit of the doubt.
I
think he's taking a pretty clear moral stand that sex trafficking's bad. And because of that, so we're saying that is a sin, you might say. But,
yes.
The sinner should still be loved. And this is why this argument doesn't really wash. It feels good to say, but when you really examine it, if you believe that this happened, and you believe that this is bad, then it makes the person, Vince in this case, a very bad person.
Yeah, Stern pressed him on. I actually listened to this after reading the transcript because I could get into this. And, you know, let's put it this way. Stern has turned into Don Imus in so many ways that I can't count. But at the same time, he also just kind of says, hey, look, I've had people in my circle do this. And you just have to cut them out. And John Cena's kind of like, yeah, you know, trying to do the altruistic thing. It's just like, dude, he won't ever. I mean, he is an empty vessel, much like Dwayne is an empty vessel. You know, they just will not go there in terms of criticism of anybody in the circle. And
it's like, I get a guy like Mick Foley's conflictedness over this.
Mick Foley did charity stuff for Rain, though. That it should there should be no conflict over this.
That's fair.
Meanwhile, you contrast with Randy Orton, who just barely gets over the bar, in my opinion, where he goes, I would not be where I am today without Vince McMahon. This is a reading from Sports Illustrated, and there will be adult language in this one, unless I decide to truncate. What should I do here? I would not be where I am today without Vince McMahon, but fuck, I'm reading this shit. What you've seen and read, I've seen and read. As far as commenting on that, it fucking hurts my heart. It hurts my heart. How can I make this about me? You know, that's what this felt like to me. I'm just like, remember, Randy Orton's the guy who used to put his hand down his pants, touch his penis, and say, and then shake hands. And that's how he would initiate writers with, hey, good to meet you. Welcome to the company. Now shake my hand. Oh, you're going to big time me? You know, that kind of crap. You know, he opened people's gym bags, allegedly. You know, I'm not looking to Randy Orton for moral clarity of any kind, you know.
Right.
I'm not looking to any celebrity for moral clarity of any kind either. But if you think you're gonna get them on talking bad about their employer, I got news for some of you people. They ain't gonna do it. They're bad at PR and they're bad at this game, but they're not going that far. They're gonna give you some gobbledygook and let you go on your way. And people like me will have to analyze it.
I think that gets into a real important question for us, like the readers, the listeners, and that sort of thing to sort of consider. And there's going to be a different answer for everybody, which is, what do you reasonably expect a current employee of the company to say on this matter? I kind of think in that paradigm, Randy Orton saying, I'm reading this shit in that parlance makes it clear, like, you know, fuck, I'm reading this shit, to me makes it clear implicitly that he reads this shit and he believes it.
Yes.
That he does believe that this really occurred, and it sits uneasy with him. But also at the same time, yeah, like he can't, you know, defame the company.
No, because they're involved in the litigation.
Right. But there's potentially legal exposure.
But here's where you would get other podcasters and people on X and whatever going, well, you know, you're an independent contractor. You should stand up to your company, blah, 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 blah. It's, you know, I think the expectation is there for everybody to just kind of trash Vince, trash the company, without realizing, hey, I got to step into work on Monday, kind of. And I think the proper response is, we'll get blasted by normals like us, but the proper response is, I cannot comment at this time because there's ongoing litigation.
Yeah, or even if you wanted to make it a little less
legal,
nerdy, a little less legal and nerdy, okay, like that. Sorry. Like, no, I'd be so like, look, guys, it's not proper for me to weigh in on this one. Yeah, I have thoughts.
You coward! How dare you? You need to trash them so AEW can be better.
I think it's actually fine and good for people to draw the line and say, I actually don't have to have a heavy opinion on this. I don't have to have a public opinion on this. I have a private one, but I don't have a public one. That's actually an okay thing to say in a matter like this too.
You know what? That's not a bad way to do it. Look, I have a public response and I have a private response.
I have a public opinion. It's a strong one. A private opinion. It's a strong one. And I have a public opinion and it's this.
When politicians do it, it's cowardly. But when real people do it, I'm fine with it.
I guess in that sense, it's like the difference is like, what company are they working for?
That's
right?
True.
Like, yeah, you know, the politician theoretically is working for the company of America or the state or whatever, of which we all have a share, Jeffrey. But like, no, like, you know, like, you know, I know America, God, shit.
I know the song, but you're not American.
Oh, beautiful for space.
All I can think of is Red Dawn right now before they get shot. That's all I can think of.
Shining sea. All right. The company.
Harry Dean Stanton yelling, avenge me. Okay, go ahead.
Like, you know, like, I just don't think that they have a job to opine on the mechanics of the company. It's like, you know, the tram or whatever. I'm not obligated to give a big weigh in on the latest tram controversy if that goes down. What do you think about this, Chris? Well, I have internal thoughts and external thoughts, and I need to keep them separate.
What does your tram think about what's going on in the Middle East right now, Chris? You know, it's kind of like saying that. I get it. Moving on to actually, and this is where Rich and I differed a bit, and I'll explain this because usually what happens in the disc or in the Slack stays in the Slack, but you know, hey, why not? Jen Pepperman, who we talked about last week, senior creative with WWE, has now joined AEW as vice president of creative content. Let's just throw it all out there. She was poached by AEW, presumably as a Mercedes Moné whisperer in many ways.
And potentially the new architect of whatever's going to go on in the women's division.
Whatever goes on in the women's division. And
that's something they need.
I like the hire a lot. And, you know, I understand wrestling fans and the grand poobah is one of them. You know, hey, I just watch my wrestling for wrestling. I want good wrestling. I don't want television or drama or scripted stuff. And I get that.
Then you'll be really excited because pretty much anything Peppermint will do will probably move us further away from black and white Tony Storm juxtaposed against an in-color opponent.
I don't know. Look, yeah, they people who are criticizing this have good concerns too because they're afraid, okay, maybe Peppermint is a quote-unquote system quarterback, so to speak, and maybe she has been, I mean, she was with WWE for almost 7 years. Maybe that's all she knows, and she comes from a soap opera world, which is also melodrama. And I understand those concerns, but there's a few things that, you know, my co-host kind of from last night was discussing with me that have kind of been lingering in my head. And I'll tell you why. Okay. Why I think this is also a very good hire. Number one, the obvious. She has real television experience. She is a member, or she was a member of the Directors Guild. She's written, she knows acting, she knows writing. She has multiple facets of herself, and she could help coach those things in certain people that don't know anything about them. Like, for example, how to stage a backstage promo or something to that effect, you know? Number two, and this was the part I balked on, but now I've softened my stance on this because I had writer brain when they said this. My buddy Paul Ace Fontaine, at Paul Ace Fontaine on X, he's like, it's really good to have a woman in the room writing for women. And you know, writer Jeff goes, well, no, if you're a writer, you should be able to write for either sex. But realize this. Does Tony Khan seem like the kind of person who has had very deep relationships with people as a billionaire son that could give a good perspective? I mean, women need someone that they could trust in the thing. And I think that's overall a good thing for a women's division to have. And, you know, be it, even if she's a, I keep calling it, want to call her a Sasha Whisperer, but it's a Mercedes Whisperer. If she's like the Gewurz to her Rock, she's in there to help be the voice in the room. Possibly if somebody comes up with an angle so dumb or sexist or stupid where she can then put the halt to it and go, no, that's not a good idea. That's not what women would do. You know, toxic masculinity, however you want to wrap that up. I think that's overall a very, very positive thing in addition to just all the general television stuff.
Yeah, I think her resume is a very strong resume. I mean, obviously I made the soap opera joke last week, but I think that one of the benefits of coming from that type of writing background is understanding structure and yes, actually having an organizing philosophy to this. You know, that will, I think, flow downstream to better in-ring action in terms of the matches having more salience and relevance and being more engaging. And being honest right now with how they've been utilizing their women's roster and kind of how they have to utilize their women's roster, it's in the middle portion of the show. So sometimes you're going to need to do storytelling, change of pace, sort of matches, these sorts of things to serve the needs of the show. I think that Peppermint will probably be very good at that. And I'm with you. I think that AEW has not had a lot of success writing good women's programs with men so far. They tried it with Kenny Omega. It wasn't compelling stuff. They've tried it with Tony Khan. I don't think it's been compelling stuff. I am kind of with you. I don't think that Tony Khan's necessarily the person who understands how to write for the female audience. He wouldn't be my first pick as the pen to write really, really good and realistic women dialogue.
We're already failing the Bechdel test with the Ruby Soho story. So, I mean,
yeah.
And look, I've talked to some people in WWE behind the scenes, and we saw certain wrestling personalities come out and say this was a great hire as well. I have not talked to a single person who had a bad thing to say about Jen Peppermint. And that saying something, because everybody kind of has that flaw in there. And look, if that happens in AEW, you'll probably hear about it because people leak all the time in both companies now. But I, you know, It's one of those things where it's like, I get the pushback from wrestling purists and stuff. And I also, you know, even old school types who, I mean, this is kind of how I made friends in the company when you know, the critics were saying, you know, why do you need writers, et cetera? You know, back in the day, wrestlers could, you know, had to learn on the fly and they had to learn how to cut a promo or else they weren't good wrestlers. Well, you got a lot of good, smooth wrestlers in AEW who have what I like to call the Ricochet problem. And remember, Ricochet to Dave Meltzer was a can't-miss property. Ricochet, he's special. He can go get in there over on his
athleticism. I know a thing or two about this, and they believed that, and there was enough of a hype train around Ricochet that an entire wrestling promotion was truly structured around him.
Yes.
In Lucha Underground. They built the initial seasons around him.
Which you used to recap on this very fine network. Right,
right. And so I will tell you exactly how that story ended. He was extremely compelling the first season. And then they handed him a microphone. And the shine started to sparkle off week after week. Every time Prince Puma picked up the microphone, you wish that he hadn't.
I mean,
it matters.
Yeah.
It does. It matters. It's especially 10 years ago, it is awesome to have a high work rate, high athleticism guy. He was, you know, in a lot of ways perfect for the moment, but he couldn't talk on the microphone. So his angles didn't cook. So the allure of the Ricochet match slowly went away. He had a lot of really good matches, but my favorite match of his on that show was in the first season, and it was his feud against Brian Cage, of all people. But Brian Cage served as a really good foil to him.
Like, and I think in AEW, it has to be a two-way street. I think you can have this creative presence backstage there, writing things, pitching ideas, et cetera, but, you know, if you're someone who's not great on promos, you know, my joke is Kenny Omega, but, you know, other people, you know, just basically guys who have been raised on the indies and have never had to cut promos on television in a national company because they don't do that anymore. This isn't the territories where you go from one territory or another and you cut five local promos for five house shows that you're going to be doing and you get better at it. It's not a skill that's taught necessarily. Wrestling school doesn't necessarily teach it either all that well. If you go to her and say, hey, I'm working on something, she will be happy probably to work with you. If you do the thing like has been rumored about, you know, the thing that Punk got so angry about with the legends in the back where it's like, well, I don't want their advice. I'm just going to go my own way type of thing. If you do that with the creatives as well, of course you're going to have a negative point of view with the creatives and stuff, but go use that person as a resource and see what they have to offer you. And then if you don't like it, that's fine. But it's just one of those things where I think there's potential here where maybe, I mean, Peppermint wouldn't have quit WWE if she didn't think, well, maybe I'll have a little bit more freedom over in AEW as well. And I think maybe
a little bit more control by creative.
Yes.
The idea that you have an organized creative, especially for the women's division, which, again, I know people want AEW to be a 50-50, 50%, you know, men's wrestling, 50% women's wrestling.
That's not going to happen, ever.
It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. They don't have the roster to do that with. I think if you assembled a perfect dream roster of women between both companies, that could be possible, but it's not possible with AEW's current roster. And it's not really, it's just not how they're ever going to use Dynamite. So with that understood, Peppermint needs to have a shorter, tighter program. And I think if it's better controlled and more contoured, that'd be good.
Yeah. Speaking of empty vessels, old Dwayne The Rock announcing that his $7 productions are working on a biopic of the Nature Boy Ric Flair, stating on Instagram, as a wild kid who grew up in the wild world of professional wrestling. God, I hate when he says that. I idolize the nature boy Ric Flair. He was one of my heroes, and once I broke into the wrestling business and began to spill my own sweat and blood in arenas across America, my reverence for Ric turned to great respect because I realized just how rare and almost impossible it is to truly disrupt the wrestling business and truly change the game, and that's exactly what Ric Flair did.
But that's Flair- also what he did. That's also what The Rock did that too. That's so neat.
Ric Flair had a relentless passion to be the greatest of all time, but with achieving that GOAT status, he also sacrificed it all and paid a heavy price and lived to tell the story. I've known Ric since I was 8 years old when he and my dad, Rocky Soul Man Johnson, were wrestling together in the NWA, in parentheses, National Wrestling Alliance. This project is personal for me, and we at Seven Bucks Productions and Kevin Mischer Films can't wait to tell his unbelievable story. As always, thank you for the house, Ric. Now, if you are in the bubble like myself, and Chris is enough in the bubble to know this,
you're wrestling like, now, really is a wild world, Jeff. Is that what you're going to say?
Now is not the time to do a biopic, a sanitized biopic of Ric Flair. I'm sorry, not the time. But I had friends who don't follow wrestling anymore and kind of just know it tangentially. You're like, Jeff, did you hear about this? Isn't this awesome? They're going to make a movie about Ric Flair. And I don't have the heart to tell these people what's been going on with Ric Flair for the past couple of weeks. You know, it's kind of like, I don't want to tell them Santa doesn't exist. Sorry to kids listening right now.
Bad news.
What is he thinking?
Never mind the fact that WWE got themselves distanced from Ric Flair only for Dwayne Johnson to recreate or like remove that distance.
Yank it.
it's unreal. Meanwhile, you have on WWE television, or I'm sorry, on AEW television, Ric Flair now allied with the Young Bucks, which I get how on one hand this makes sense going into Sting's last match. On another hand, meta parse this real quickly. Is Ric Flair really someone you need to be next to? Is that a good thing? Are we doing a good thing here?
Oh, I think this is just to get Rick a pop in Greensboro because he's not going to turn on Sting. This is all a ruse, and I'm hoping he gets double super kicked for the heat. But you know, I this is all to serve Rick in some
right.
way in this
right.
story.
It is a ruse.
It's a complete and total ruse, in my opinion.
Rick's going to turn on the Young Bucks. He's the dirtiest player in the game. Like, yes. He does do a backstab, but it's on the Young Bucks.
Yes, and he's going to get cheered in Greensboro, because remember, that's where this is. Or it doesn't matter if he turns on Sting in Greensboro. He'll still get cheered there, and he'll probably get double super kicked or hit, or he's taking a bump in Greensboro, is what I'm telling you.
Yeah, he wants to take a bump for sure.
Do you have thoughts on the movie, though, Mr. Novembrino?
I think...
Get the guy who played him in the Iron Claw.
That could be fun.
No, it wouldn't. He sucked. That dude sucked.
Well, I was going to try to think of someone who would be better to play Ric Flair. I think what would be fun is just get like Jack Black or something and put him in the nose. Just like a nose prosthetic.
Like Bradley Cooper and Maestro.
Yeah, like a really bad like beak nose thing, and that's Ric Flair.
Jack Black with a beak.
With a beak nose
like
thing.
Like a Toucan Sam beak, like from a Fruit Loops commercial.
Like, you know how Flair, especially like later on, his nose got really big. Yes. You know, like the man's largely nose at this point.
How about a nose with feet?
Oh my God. Ric Flair as played by an anthropomorphic nose, and does all the Flair bumps and everything too. Like the nose climbs to the top ropes and like flops over. The nose puts like the Von Erichs in the figure four leg lock, like all of these things.
God, we're terrible people.
I don't think so. I like us more.
Ending the news, Brock Lesnar will not be in WWE 2K24 as a playable character.
No way.
But is involved in some of the story, so he is in the game. He is in the game. We're just not going to let people play him. There's been no official reasoning as to why this is. I assume he might be unlockable. There's been speculation that this is because he was signed, because he was singled out in the affidavit, but that's...
Yeah, he got unlocked on the affidavit, it seemed like.
Well, I think it's too far in production to have hidden him. That's the weird thing about this. Like, everybody's saying this is because of that, but this might be a blessing in disguise in some ways.
Yeah, no, I think that Brock was probably too woven into some of the other programming to do a full removal, but yeah. Deactivating him, I don't think it was a bad idea.
From the active roster? Yeah, I assume it's for that reason, but that he was already in the game, and you're going to, because it's celebrating 40 years of WrestleMania or whatever it is, you're going to have to probably beat Brock in a match at some point in the storyline, but that's going to be the extent of your usage of him, I believe.
Yeah, I mean, TKO's got to kind of brace for impact depending on this Brock Lesnar thing of, are they going to have to do like a Benoit-level scrubbing of Lesnar-y stuff from storylines? That's going to hurt.
I don't think we get to Benoit territory. Cause, I mean, we can't even get Vince out of all that. I mean, there's no way we're going to get Vince to scrub, and people have been suggesting that. And I'm like, all right, good luck with that.
Well, but like, no, when I say Benoit territory, like, he's never a focal point in any of the games anymore. Like, Chris Benoit? Yeah.
Well, he hasn't been alive for some time, Chris.
Well, no, but what I'm saying is in like the historical WrestleMania,
yeah,
like,
yeah,
look,
well,
back,
no.
Yeah, right. And
he was historical for one WrestleMania, and that was it. And then you know, we just yell Eddie at the top of our lungs so that people don't remember Chris Benoit at all.
Right. So, like, I'm wondering, you know, if the Lesnar thing kind of gets off, and like the stuff in the deposition is correct about Lesnar, you might have to end up doing something like that, like the breaking of the Undertaker streak. Who's to say who did that? Anyone could have. Probably Edge.
Oh, yeah, maybe. Maybe it was Nicholas, the guy who teamed with the kid who teamed with Braun Strowman to win the tag.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I thought you were talking about Nick and Tom Mysterio.
Oh, Nick and Tom Mysterio, yes.
Yeah, Nicholas and Thomas Mysterio.
Speaking of which, that's the end of our news segment. Now for the lazy river of wrestling criticism. If you've never listened to this show, God help you. You've come into a good one. But whatever we watched or had time for this week, be it past or present, we'll get to it during this lazy river. But we usually start on the banks of the lazy river, if there is a pay-per-view or what do they call it? ELP or what? EP?
What?
Whatever dumb corporate.
PLE. It's PLE.
Thank you.
It's not ELP. It's
ELO. It's Jeff Lynn.
It's not ELP. It's not ELP.
It's Jeff Lynn and the Electric Light Orchestra. No, an E. Premium Live Event, PLE. In Perth, Australia. Actually named Elimination Chamber, Perth. Brock Lesnar, removed from this card, was planned to have a program with Dirty Dom Mysterio after the Royal Rumble. His plans next, also next, rumored to have been next, was that the sixth woman in this women's Elimination Chamber was supposed to possibly be one Jade Cargill. Plans change. Unknown what the future holds for Jade Cargill. But nevertheless, only four matches announced so far. I assume there will be something. Oh, there is something. There's something with the actual Australian talent. What's his name? Kid with the
Grayson Waller.
Grayson Waller. You have a Grayson Waller effect with Cody and Seth Rollins. But here goes. For the undisputed WWE Tag Team Championship, the Judgment Day of Finn Balor and Damian Priest taking on, I did not know they had a name, New Catch Republic of Pete Dunne and Tyler Bate.
The New Catch Republic. I had no, that is news to me.
We can't use British strong style anymore because Trent Seven is nowhere to be found.
Fair. Fair. I don't think the boys are winning this.
No, I don't either. I think it's possibly even going to be murdered. I think it'll be a good match for about like 7 minutes. And then it's just going to become the Judgment Day being
Judgment Day pins bait.
I have a question for you, though.
Okay.
Is it possible? Because we haven't gotten away from R-Truth and this Judgment Day story, have we? Even though they've beaten him down. Is R-Truth going to win this briefcase and cash it in for the 24/7 title? Because I'm starting to think that.
He would, wouldn't he?
Yes. just to screw over any piece of tension or realism in this story, it's going to turn out to have a comedy ending, isn't it?
I guess so. Like, that's...
It's like
he had the 24/7 shirt on, but the 24/7 title's been retired.
Yes.
Yeah.
So you know how he brings like a ladder to a Royal Rumble match?
Yeah, right.
He decides to cash the title in for a title that no longer exists.
Yeah.
Okay, fine.
Something good going with the R-Truth thing, but they always make him a little too stupid.
They should have knocked him out for a while. Instead, he's back the next week. Doing the same shtick. I couldn't believe it. I'm just like, you use that for heat and then you're happy to have him back when he comes back to get his revenge. But yeah, they've gone into the camp territory with us and they've ruined it, as you know, as they are prone to do at times. For the women's world title, Rhea Ripley versus Nia Jax. Now,
Nia's losing.
Yeah. I did like that she destroyed all the people in the
Everything.
Elimination chamber.
Yeah, I thought that was really good. It was actually a very well-written promo on Raw.
Yeah.
Because they started off with, you know, Rhea as fait accompli, and then somebody came out, I think Raquel came out, and Raquel was like, hey, wait, Nia could still, you know, be the champion. It could be either or, blah, blah, blah. And then the segment ends with Nia annihilating everybody, which... is good, especially because she's not going to win the title here, and nor should she. And I thought that was a good way to make the challenger look strong, but not at the expense of the champion going into the title match.
Yeah, Rhea Ripley's winning this. I think Nia Jax may appear in the women's elimination chamber later. Maybe not as a contestant or a participant, but as someone to beat down on some people and possibly... I'll just say it. I think maybe Nia attack gets into the elimination chamber. Maybe Jade Cargo comes in and makes the save and gets rid of Nia so that the match continues. Something like that. It feels like Jade and Bianca are going to be put up against Asuka and Io, and this is possibly a way to get that program started on the road to WrestleMania. So we'll see.
Bianca is a very good way of covering up Cargill's weaknesses.
I agree, and I think that's the whole point. So we'll get to the Elimination Chamber for the Women's World title at WrestleMania. Becky Lynch versus Bianca Belair versus Liv Morgan versus Tiffany Stratton versus Naomi versus the returning Raquel Rodriguez. Boy, was that Battle Royal bad. But it got its job done. It got Raquel Rodriguez over. She got huge pop in Anaheim. They went with chalk on this one for the most part, with the exception of Tiffany Stratton, because Naomi just coming in and being part of the Elimination Chamber, you know, veteran presence, as we like to say. Tiffany Stratton's doing her best, but she still looks out of place on the main roster. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, she could have used a little bit more time down in NXT. This is
She's nervous and she feels nervous in every single thing that she's in.
This reminds me a lot of Mandy Rose.
A lot.
Not getting it the first time up. And then she went back down to NXT and Mandy became good.
Yeah.
She wasn't great, but Mandy but she was solid.
Yes.
Like, man, yeah. And that
in
second run in NXT.
Yeah.
Yeah. That second run in NXT helped Mandy Rose find character. No, dude, her command of character was great. Her in-ring was always serviceable. But she actually managed to put together a formula that served as a solid top of the card, like main faction thing. Yeah, Toxic Attraction was good. Tiffany Stratton, they called her up too soon. I get it. I get the timeline, but I she would have benefited from being champion in NXT longer.
I agree. And having a few programs where she, gave championship, a little bit of like the Flair style champion more than just I'm holding the title type of champion.
Yep.
Does anybody other than Becky Lynch have a shot at this? Because there's been some rumblings that Liv Morgan might be able to finish her story with Rhea, and I'm saying there's no way in hell that happens.
Yeah, no, it's Becky.
It's Becky.
It's yeah. Becky, yeah.
And for the men, a good match, I think, for the most part. Drew McIntyre versus Randy Orton versus Bobby Lashley versus LA Knight versus Kevin Owens versus Logan Paul. I am excited to see Logan Paul in the Elimination Chamber. I'm going to say this. This is a stunt show match, and Logan Paul will be up for doing stunts. I get it. LA Knight, to me, is the weak link in here, but, he's not bad.
It's just not a match that favors the LA Knight.
No.
Like, thing.
Yeah. And nobody believes that LA Knight's going to win this thing.
No. I mean, that's honestly one of the big problems with this Elimination Chamber is that, a lot of these guys, they've really ran the tread off the tires on this. You don't think that Orton, Lashley, or Knight, or even Owens at this point are...
Wants a match with Seth Rollins either.
Rollins. Yeah, yeah, right. Yeah, that's the other thing is that none of them have any built-in with Seth Rollins. So this has got to be a vehicle to get to Drew McIntyre.
Yeah. I'm not.
yeah. Right.
It's Drew and nothing. And then, enjoy the show.
I guess yeah, it's Drew. And then I guess Logan, if you wanted to have a true dark horse, cause the Logan Seth Rollins chemistry was good, but those are the only two actual stories.
We've already had Rollins and Logan at WrestleMania,
right,
though. So.
Right, and we've already done, Owens and Rollins, and we've done Orton and Rollins, and Lashley and Rollins is a match that no one's clamoring for, and LA Knight versus Rollins means nothing.
And this is not to diminish Drew McIntyre, who continues to be fantastic.
He's awesome. He's so good.
Yeah, so that's all I have for that. That'll be on at 2 in the morning, Saturday morning my time. Not waking up to watch that live. I'll get to it when I get to it. So now, anywhere else in the Lazy River, WWE, AEW, Classic Wrestling, what have you, Chris, I will let you begin.
All right. Let's begin with what I thought was a pretty entertaining little episode of Dynamite.
Yes.
I think that it was well paced. The opening match here was, I think that AEW has been relying a little bit too much on time limit-y stuff recently, and they don't do a good job with not giving the game away with it. But that being said, FTR versus Blackpool Combat Club was a really good match. Problem was just when the timekeeper keeps saying the times. I know they do it sometimes, but on the times when they want to have a time finish, be like the resolution, they always say it louder and they make it more, it becomes a Chekhov's gun. I think that it would be better if the timekeeper forgot to announce it in the final 5 minutes and we didn't realize that time was running out.
Or if they've always been announcing it and then it never came into play until this time right now. But I mean, how many, they don't have a lot of 15 minute matches in AEW
either. They don't, and they should have more of those too.
No,
they should have more.
I don't want more 15 minute matches in AEW.
I mean time finish matches.
Oh yeah, time finishes. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah. Like 10 minute matches that the match stops. Like for prelim stuff, I think it's fine. I don't want that in the main event. But they give away the game on the main event, too. When they tell you that there's going to be an overrun, then what they are basically saying is everything in the first part of this main event doesn't mean crap. Fast forward.
Yeah. I agree with you wholeheartedly. I loved that FTR Blackpool Combat Club match because it addressed the one concern from the Dax versus Moxley match the week before that I didn't like, in that the intensity was never turned up in that Dax versus Moxley match. It was 15 minutes of, or 12 minutes of good wrestling with no real heat, even though they were chopping each other for the first half of it. You know, it didn't feel like they were trying to beat each other up at any time. There was no hatred there of any kind. They turned it up in the second half of this match, and it was really good. And I'll tell you what else I really liked is that for the first time in ages, when security in the locker room came to break up the fight, it felt like how a fight would actually be broken up. You know, a couple guys walking away, a couple guys trying to get back in there. There was none of that, you know, Goldberg or Lesnar run through six indie guys who are in black shirts to get to the other guy. It felt like when cops come to break up a fight, nobody's getting at each other, but they're still kind of jawing at each other. And it kind of just dissipates all of a sudden. I liked that. I thought that was a nice touch.
Yeah, the blocking on the security was really good, too. That was something that stuck out to me. I just thought security came off as an actual meaningful presence,
yes,
a stopping force, which is what security's supposed to be. And, like, the wrestlers should be able to momentarily disrupt security's ability to secure, but they shouldn't ever be able to completely annihilate the entire security team.
Although that begs the question, where were they during Deanna and Tony Storm?
They were tired, Jeff.
They were tired. Yeah, that's what I said. They were getting a snack. They were on a break.
Yeah. They came out once, and that was a lot.
I'm going to continue the Dynamite love here, and I am going to say on record that I think it housed three career promos for three talents on this show. I think Daniel Garcia had the promo of his life on this show. I'm not saying it was a perfect promo, but I'm saying it was his best promo he's ever done in terms of that. And Christian, of course, coming out and talking about the dead father, fantastic stuff.
I actually really like Nick Wayne's mother. And the way her reactions to what Christian says are really, really well performed.
She's somewhat uncomfortable with the whole thing.
Yes. She's really good at getting that across.
Yes, I would agree.
I got some roses to throw at her feet. She's doing a really good job conveying, like, facial discomfort and stuff and micro expressions and things. And like, it's good.
And even Nick, in a way, where he's kind of like, laughing at Garcia being on the other end of what Nick was at one time.
Yep.
It's kind of good here. I'm kind of liking it. But you know, the only part I didn't like about Garcia's thing is, like, when I danced, you all danced with me. I was like, I thought he was going to be a wrestler here, but
fuck yeah, we did. Yeah.
Sorry. You know, I'm just like, ugh. I mean, there's always that one minor weakness in every great thing, and I have to excuse it. But at the same time, I'm just like, dude, the dancing it got you over, but at the same time, at what cost? Because Jericho poached you from the Blackpool Combat Club. Although, God help me, it helped Wheeler immensely. Secondly, Wardlow. Also, again, a little bit of a poison pill in this thing where he's talking about office politics of never getting a world title shot, but him running down Punk without mentioning Punk, running down MJF, and running down, I believe, Hangman. Wardlow came out here and cut the promo. I've been waiting for him to cut for quite some time, and I kind of liked it.
My only note on the Wardlow promo is that he needs to also be, especially as a heel, he should really hate the fans for liking MJF because MJF tormented him.
Yes.
Like he, part of why he, like, should have contempt for the fans is, you cheer him. He enslaved me. It took, like, you basically took advantage of the fact that I'm poor and that I needed to support my family. And, like, you guys still cheer him? Like, don't boo me. Boo yourselves. Boo you. I need him to have a little bit more disdain. I thought it was the promo of his career. Absolutely. It's certainly the promo that people have been waiting for him to kind of show up with. I still have this Undisputed Era Mach 2 stuff really is incoherent and loosey-goosey. Like, Wardlow's relationship with all of this feels confused.
Yeah,
I'm not saying it would have been better with Adam Cole out there, but I didn't understand, like, did Adam Cole say Wardlow go out and say this? Did Adam Cole know that Wardlow was going to go out and give a promo like this, like in kayfabe, you know?
Yeah, no, I'm feeling it. And I'm gonna throw this out here, and I want to see what you think about this. I think that might have been the best promo of Sting's career. I have watched a lot of Sting. I've watched Sting from UWF to now. I've watched him on WCW and NWA. He those types of things. They were kind of vapid and dumb and whatever. TNA Joker Sting was kind of fun. But this one where he's being pensive, he knows he's at the end of the road. He's the old gunfighter sitting at the bar, you know, I compared to John Wayne in The Shootist. And, you know, he's talking about his father who just passed, and he's looking in the camera, and he keeps derivatively referring to Matthew and Nicholas as Bucks. I loved this promo from Sting. I thought it was a level of depth I haven't seen in a Sting promo in a long, long time. I liked Main Event Mafia Sting, but I don't think he ever got to this level. I thought this was great.
It was a really good promo. It's just it.
But Sting's notoriously bad promo. So it's one of those things where maybe I'm grading on a curve and saying it's the best one I've seen him do. I don't know. Maybe I'm forgetting one. Maybe he did one when he was like teaming with the Dudes with Attitudes or something like that. Maybe I'm forgetting something, you know. Trucker Norman, I really like you.
It's going to shock the world because he is the Shock Master. Yeah, Sting.
Epaulette Sting, underrated look, though. I really like where he's dressed like he's going into a battle in the 18th century. I really. All right, actually, it looks like Cody Rhodes does now.
Yeah, I was just saying, Cody Rhodes basically does like that era Sting in a lot of ways.
In many ways, now that I think about it, he's Sting from 1990 or something.
1990, yeah. There's a lot of homage to Sting. I agree with you. I thought that Sting doing the down promo, it works because it's the end of his career. I love the resolution too. Like, he's resolute, and this is a resolution of his career. I think that's a strong thing.
Which is amazing on a show with Ric Flair, who used to be the best promo in the business, coming in there with marbles and not respected anymore.
$5 and $10 bucks.
It's sad. Just sad. I wish he wouldn't go. I mean, of course, dressing like a couch in the 70s. What's he doing?
He dresses like a grandpa pimp.
Grandpa pimp. Your turn, sir.
All right. The Tony Storm and Deonna Purrazzo thing, they're going to keep trying, but this is just never going to get off the ground.
Like, why would you do a beatdown of Deonna Purrazzo 2 weeks before the pay-per-view if she's not going to win? Which she's not.
Right.
Because the money's in Mercedes and Tony.
Right.
What are they doing?
If anything, Deonna Purrazzo needs to be the formidable challenger who just narrowly misses.
You know what they're going to do?
What?
They're going to have Deonna beat down Tony in the go home. That makes it okay.
She needs to beat is Mariah May.
Yes, that too.
Seriously, like, that's what needs to happen, is she needs to beat Mariah May. Mariah May gets left high and dry by Tony yet again. It doesn't need to be a dominant victory over Mariah, but like, it's one where Mariah loses because she doesn't get the help from Tony.
See, that'll be the match after the pay-per-view, though. I guarantee that's what Tony's thinking is, like, well, or Tony Khan. It's like, oh, well, we'll get her heat back by having her beat Mariah after the pay-per-view when she needs to beat the crap out of her before the pay-per-view.
That's not visionary thinking, Jeff. You build to the pay-per-view the week after.
Look, for all our criticism of AEW over the past couple years, this has been the best in terms of doing on television build for the pay-per-view top to bottom that they've ever done.
Yeah, broadly speaking, look, they're consistently hitting the notes that they need to hit every week. You can't say they're not.
They're hitting the notes they need to hit every week.
Well, I mean, like, look, they know they need to play the Tony Storm Deanna Purrazzo song every week. The song's a stupid song.
Yeah.
But we're hearing it every week.
Yeah.
And that's it. Like, while I don't like this program, and I'm not going to make any bones about that, and if it's a mystery to anyone, boy, you're bad at context. This is still the right point of emphasis. Emphasize your programs.
Yeah. Your turn, sir. I'm just going to give you another turn for the hell of it.
Okay. Honestly, the only match on the show that didn't really have any intrigue for me was the Main Event Trios match, just because I am done with Rob Van Dam. I don't care. And also, why are we still making pot jokes in 2024? It's weird. Like, pot's not...
Because pot smokers need to be isolated and mocked.
Well, I know you... That's just a personal pathology that you're working through, Jeffrey.
They're derelicts of society, Chris Novembrino. We must...
You know what?
Oh, look, Uber conservative Jeff has entered the chat. No,
It's your turn. Do something stupid.
It is my turn. I successfully trolled you. I don't understand that. How does that happen in 2024 in the year of our Lord?
Exactly. How is this happening?
How are you getting upset with me over an obvious troll? I don't get that.
Jeffrey, there's a little space in hell for comments like that you make and your face.
Aw, no, this hug. Okay. I'm going to hit NXT for a quick shot. I'm well-versed in my love of Thea Hale and JC Jane. This dating segment was utterly ridiculous and made even more ridiculous by the insertion of Ariana Grace pretending to try and eavesdrop and making steps and steps and then offering... Hey, when a guy opens the door for you, you should thank him. Basic bourgeois values are now played for camp, but I like all these people, and if Ariana Grace can improve in ring, I can't wait for her to be the heir apparent to Chelsea Green, because I think she's very good at playing this flaky type of character. But look, Thea and JC were fantastic in it too. Jasmine Nix, the former Jade Gentile, I think her name was. I'm not there yet with her, but it looks like they're just going to redo Pretty Deadly. Or not, what was their name? Toxic Attraction.
Toxic Attraction.
Yeah, Pretty Deadly is on the main roster, sorry. Toxic Attraction with JC and a new person. That's all this feels like. But
I think actually... Okay, if we're on NXT, I think we're just turning all of Chase University heel except for Thea Hale. Thea's going to leave the university, and the U is going to
go. Oh, so you
go.
Think Chase U has become corrupted by JC's dirty money?
I mean, it's not just the dirty money. I think, moral turpitude has seeped in. Look, the weakness has always been there with Duke Hudson. The guy's always been a jerk.
He's always been a heel in a babyface stable. Yes.
Yeah, he's always been a heel in a babyface stable. And... Andre Chase, his argument for why Chase U should have been in title contention this week was morally unscrupulous. Just because you have a shitty deal with the mafia guys who were the champions doesn't mean that that makes you number one contender now. So, they actually came in with a heel argument to enter into that match.
That was a good match, by the way, but I'll get to that in a second. But it goes to a larger point here. We're turning all the people that we've made likable over the past 3 months into heels. Roxanne Perez, turning heel. Lyra Valkyria, looks like, is turning heel. Even though we did all that character work with her and Becky Lynch, because we're doing single white female with her. Looks like Von Wagner might be turning heel on Mr. Stone. It's like we're just going to turn all our baby faces heel. And then what are we going to have for baby faces on this roster? It's going to be dreadful television is what it's going to be. Because
And in the case of Lyra Valkyria and also Mr. Stone and Von Wagner, they had found really interesting
yes
baby face formulations
and people that weren't that interesting in the first place,
right? Like Lyra Valkyria is not that interesting, but
no.
Tatum Paxley has absolutely given her a charisma injection, and I think Tatum I think Tatum's good. I think Tatum's good in a role.
Wait, did you are you serious now? Because I thought we were saying that this Tatum Paxley thing was ruining the work we did with Lyra.
With Lyra as Lyra. A baby? Yes. I mean,
she was doing the bird crap before Becky Lynch came in.
Right. I know. That wasn't great.
No, but now we're going to have her siding with Tatum Paxley?
Yes. But like, I mean, I think I don't actually I think the Tatum stuff makes her more interesting.
Really?
I don't think. Yeah. I don't think it hurts her. I was of that opinion, but I don't think it hurts her anymore.
Who is hurt more by a heel presence, Lyra right now or Roxanne Perez? Because Roxanne Perez to me was everything nice and pure, and now she's just a brat.
I think turning Lyra heel is worse, especially because you're about to turn Roxanne heel. So like, easy move here is you have like Roxanne take out Tatum, like. Tatum, you know, Tatum doesn't not work as a baby face. Like, she could just be like Lyra's crazy friend.
Yeah, turn the metaphor baby face.
It's kind of like, well, yeah, right? Like, that would be another mistake. You know what it's like, though? It's the crazy Scottish girl from a few years back?
Kaylee Ray?
Nikki
Isla
Cross.
Nikki Cross. Okay.
Yeah, Nikki Cross. Like Tatum kind of works as like a Nikki Cross like.
All right. I can buy that. Nikki Cross was endearing in that role.
I could kind of see her. I could kind of see her working at that. Whereas, but I'd keep Lyra face is if you're gonna turn Roxanne heel. I don't think Roxanne's whining is particularly good.
No,
I her whining sucks. She needs to get better at whining.
I never thought I'd hear that as a note for a wrestler. Get better at whining.
But it's true, right?
Yes.
Like, she's supposed to be a whiny character.
Yeah, and what she's doing is she looks like she's having a temper tantrum in her own mind. Instead of really, you know, whining. She looks like she's a petulant child who is,
and it's not clear who she's mad at. And I don't, there's just like a lot of things.
She's going
about,
through puberty all of a sudden.
There's a lot of things about her petulance that isn't quite fully connected.
Grounded. It's not grounded.
It's not grounded.
I did like the Wolf Dogs winning the titles, and then I liked the celebration. I did.
Oh yeah, the Wolf Dogs are great. And to answer your other question, I think that Von Wagner, the whole joy of Von Wagner is him as a baby face.
Yes.
Like there's something really endearing about this lunky baby face who he might not be the smartest guy in the world, but he's strong and he's got a big heart.
You know what it is? It's casting against type, because that guy's always going to be a heel in most federations. The guy who looks a little weird, he's big, he's lumbering, he's Mongo. Not Mongo McMichael, but Mongo from, say, Blazing Saddles. You know, the guy, you know, the dumb lunk who, you know, is easily controllable and he's muscle for people, et cetera, et cetera. And then, you know, but this has been actually, you know, him being humanized by, what do we call the twins? I forgot their name.
The Younger Bucks.
The Younger Bucks. You know, it's endearing, and I like it. Unless you got to turn the kids heel, and that'd be. We have 2 8-year-olds on the roster who are heels. That's great.
They throw Legos in underneath the ring, like all over them. Von Wagner chokeslams the guy onto the Legos.
I'm here for this. I'm kind of here for this thing.
I'm talking myself into this. Book it.
Do we want to hit anything from the main roster? Because you really liked SmackDown a lot, I thought.
I liked Raw, too.
Raw was pretty good. Raw had some good wrestling on it, too.
I mean, I feel like we kind of ran down most of what made it good.
I want to.
One thing I will say: Jey Uso versus Gunther. I'm sorry. This really should. I don't care about Jimmy and Jey. Like Jimmy versus Jey at WrestleMania is not a thing I really care about. The only thing I can sort of say positive about this is it reignites the idea that Jimmy keeps costing Jey his first singles title. But I think that Jey beating Gunther was a really good WrestleMania program, and they should have just made that the program.
They won it because it, you know, if it's their family and the family can watch them wrestle each other, etc. But to me, it's just like, again, main event Jey Uso is once again a moron for not getting help to watch his back, because everybody knows Solo and they're so. I mean, this is my feeling about Drew and Cody too. It's like, oh, there's Solo, there's Jimmy, again, ad nauseum. I'm gonna take up a little bit of criticism of old Dwayne on SmackDown last week, though. I kind of called this. The Mormon jokes rub me the wrong way. You know, multiple wives and magic underwear and all that other stuff. I mean, he already has the homophobic stuff. He doesn't really get to another level of heat, except with kind of, you know, cheap stereotypes. I get that people like this character a lot. You know, because it's,
well, if you made these type of jokes about the Jewish community, or like at the level or scale about the Jewish community, yes, you'd be getting charged with anti-Semitism.
Exactly. That's where I get uncomfortable. It's like there are certain groups that are almost allowable to be doing this stuff against in proper society. And it's like, it shouldn't be that way, but here we are. And it makes The Rock look like an anachronism from the turn of the century. Is what,
well,
it does.
It definitely gets back to the idea that we've discussed on prior shows about The Rock, which is when you go back and revisit Rock's material from like 97 to 2000, there's not a lot of it that can time travel up to 2024. Most of it's problematic on one front or another front.
Yes.
Yeah, like, basically
strudel, you know, jokes.
Yeah.
Hermaphrodites.
If it's not misogynistic, it's transphobic. If it's not transphobic, it's homophobic. If it's not homophobic, it's probably casually prejudiced against another group or toxically masculine. Like, all The Rock's shtick was fun back then, but like Stone Cold's the one that you could still do in 2024.
Yeah.
Even though he's a raging alcoholic.
Anything particular on Raw or SmackDown you want to highlight that you really like?
I think that Drew McIntyre's character work on Raw continues to be really strong. I like the finish where the Bloodline comes out and helps Drew McIntyre. And Michael Cole, for his part, does a nice job highlighting the hypocrisy of Drew McIntyre. Drew McIntyre, sort of, you see the gears turning in his head. I like that. And also, I've been enjoying how both Michael Cole and Vic Joseph call more moves. I don't know if you've noticed this, but like the actual calling of the action has ramped up in a considerable way with both of them.
Yeah, McAfee's starting to get back into it. I mean, he still has a little bit of Art Donovan in him, but
he also cracks up Michael Cole at various points, and that shit cracks.
Well, he's
me
like
up
a
too.
Child. I mean, it's like, you know, it's like he has an eight, and Michael Cole has an 8 year old next to him. Like my favorite moment is like he's doing the Jey Uso bounce stuff and Gunther looks at him and the fear of God gets into McAfee. He sits right there. I thought that was good. I liked Gable versus Ivar.
Oh man, Gable versus Ivar was extremely entertaining. And got some time to breathe.
Yeah.
And just be a really entertaining match.
That has been an interesting program that makes no sense. Is the Ivar versus Alpha Academy stuff. To the point where I'm almost thinking Ivar's going to join Alpha Academy with Valhalla.
Like, why not, right? Maybe pretend that Valhalla's always been Maxine.
Well, we'll do something with Maxine, but this has made no sense.
Oh,
because
you need to send her back down to training and take her off TV?
Oh, God. Because Tozawa beat Ivar, although Ivar beat Otis,
right?
And then Ivar.
Ivar and Otis would be a great tag team, and I would love Chad Gable managing Ivar and Otis together.
They're the new. Although, what would you change Ivar into, or would you change Otis into a Viking?
Otis becomes a Viking.
Oh, like, God.
No, no, you have segments where Ivar teaches Otis how to Viking. Are you kidding me? These Ivar teaches Otis how to be a Viking segments would be the best thing since the Blue Blood segments where Steve Regal was teaching Bobby Eaton how to be a Blue Blood. They sit down and start eating.
We've done the Viking game stuff before with, who was it, the New Day?
Yeah, it was the New Day, right?
Yeah, it was a New Day. I thought maybe possibly Otis and
Tucker,
were involved in that somehow, too.
I almost thought that for a second, too. But, like, Otis and Ivar are not a bad idea for a big Haas team.
God.
And both those guys could go.
Give me that.
Matches. Yeah.
And have them destroy DIY. I love DIY, but those are the types of guys you destroy with a team like Ivar and Otis.
Dude, like a top rope move where like Ivar comes off the top rope with something off of Otis's power setup. Like, yes.
Speaking of R-Truth, is R-Truth thinking that DIY is DX ridiculous?
I wanted them to almost.
I don't
go
think he's
further.
Getting there with this one. I just don't. It's just a little bit too far-fetched.
It's too far-fetched, but I almost wanted them to cross the line three times and, like, actually come out to DX's music. Like, just do the full DX entrance as The Miz, Johnny Gargano, Tommaso Ciampa.
R-Truth as the Road Dog?
Yeah.
Irony there. Oh, you didn't know? would that make The Miz Billy Gunn in this...
Yeah.
Oh no.
that would have been great. They did do the suck it. Yeah. I think the DIY, you know, the DX thing was like a funny one off. I would have had them go all the way with it and actually just, especially since the match didn't matter, just to have them actually be DX for like one night for no effing reason, because like that's been. Everything with R-Truth has been just a series of non sequiturs. So, like, I don't know. I'm kind of, like, here for it being, like, for him being a bit of a goofy vortex sometimes.
I thought there was going to be a tag match of some kind with Bailey and Dakota versus EO. Versus Kyrie and
Asuka.
That
was the idea last week, right?
Well, that's what I was thinking. And I thought they were going to add this to this card because I am still on board and fully thinking that because Dakota didn't hit anybody with the chair, that she is in on it with the other three.
Yeah. And she's in all black too. Like her outfitting and everything. It just feels like she was in on it.
You know, but the backstage stuff with her, you know, trying to, you know, oh, hey Bailey, didn't you see what they were saying about me type of thing? It's working. It's a good little angle for that. And it's got the swerve. I mean, the swerve is more interesting than doing the program to me, but.
Well, yeah, we'll I see. Agree. Yeah, we'll see.
I'm not going to talk about the stuff I watched. I did watch a little bit of that Super Brawl 3.
Watched the White Castle of Fear.
Oh, did you?
Segment,
okay.
And even the match.
Okay.
The match slaps. Like real talk. Yes.
Well, hold on. Let's explain what it is so people don't. It's Sting versus Vader in a strap match.
Yeah.
That's the White Castle of Fear.
Right. It makes no sense. White Castle is not a good place to get a burger, but it is a place to get a burger. And Fear is the only place or the only thing we have to fear. So, and White Castles. So the only thing, like, anyways, the name never has made any sense. And I keep hearing it as the White Castle.
I fear White Castle. Have you ever eaten there? Yeah. I mean, that stuff will go right through you.
No, I know, right? Like, that's, like, every time I hear this name now, all I picture is, like, the worst White Castle burger restaurant on the planet, and that's where the match is or where Vader lives. The segment is one of the all-time
worst
great camp WWE or WCW segments. Like, they would make these little mini-movies around this vintage, and they're all terrible. And Sting, for his part, does not know how to do any delivery other than at this volume. Vader, what are you doing here? Like it's always at that volume. He is just yelling at all times. Vader looks like a million bucks in this match.
He's so
like,
good.
Dude, he's so ripped in this match. Like for Vader, he is just like a tank unit at this point. Like just pure power. And like his hits and his blows all look good. I even think he does a good job as this over the top campy villain. Like he does.
He's got the voice.
Yeah. Oh, Sting. Sting. Yeah. Like, I like when he, you know, like will be like more of like the, I've gone on seven continents, defended the belt. Like I like when he gets into that mode too. Vader rules. That's not a hot take coming from me, but this match,
it's great. Yeah.
Strap might be a little too short, but I think they figure out a way to work around it. There's only a few points where it seems like maybe if they had a few extra feet that the certain spots would look a little bit better. But I think this match is really good minus the convoluted rules. If anyone touches you, then that breaks the count up. I think that's stupid.
The touching turnbuckle thing in a strap match is the worst.
Yeah.
Just put them together and do it. And we warned about this during the dog collar matches, like in AEW. We were hoping that they weren't going to be that kind of thing. I watched Rock and Roll Express versus Heavenly Bodies from this show. And this match is awesome. And it's everything that, I mean, I remember watching it originally in, I believe, 93. It's either 92 or 93.
I feel like I remember this match. Is Dr. Tom like notably ripped in this match?
He's pretty ripped. I mean, this is still when it's him and Stan Lane.
Yeah, because there's one Heavenly Bodies match where I'm like, geez Louise, when did Dr. Tom get that ripped? Like, yeah.
But you know, it's everything I loved about professional wrestling as a kid. And, you know, the Rock and Roll were, you know, a little bit older, but they were still fantastic and they still had it. And this was the deal that they were making at the time because they were with Smoky Mountain because it was Watts, and Watts had been fired before the show. But you know, classic Cornette ends up in the ring, takes a bump. You know, it's just it soothes my nostalgia bug after watching that NXT, which I really didn't like all that much this week. So I told you I'm turning on Super Brawl.
I got one other note.
Or two. I can't remember which.
Ilya Dragunov is one of my favorite champions in a very, very long time.
Really?
And
more than Samoa Joe?
Samoa Joe's up there too. I think, look, if Joe didn't have like transitional champion vibes energy, he would be right up there with Dragunov. Although Joe's a very, very strong, like, you know, I think very highly of Joe, but I think Dragunov, the new wrinkle here, like you could go the red contacts are goofy. I think the whole idea that Dragunov keeps himself entertained and engaged by mentally breaking his opponents, I think it's awesome.
Warfare, Ilya Dragunov. Because, I mean, he started doing this with the Trick and Mellow stuff.
Yep. And that he's always... He's always playing around a little bit with reality, and even when he's telling the truth, he likes to keep you he'll tell you the truth, but in a way to keep you on edge, to make you think that he's lying. And I like that he uses the truth as a form of deception, and like that he's just really trying to mentally break his opponents. I think
they need to play up that aspect a little bit more, because I don't think it's coming across necessarily. I think it's just coming off as Ilya being a little weird.
Right. That right now, I don't think they've done a good enough job connecting the dots on the hugging Baron Corbin moment, hugging Trick Williams moment. I think it will come across when he hugs Carmelo. I think Carmelo is actually a perfect foil for him to truly psychologically break.
Well, because they're both playing games.
Right. And Carmelo's going to get outplayed.
Yes. Yeah. So that'll work too. That's a good place to end. Been Shake Them Ropes. You can follow me on Elon Musk's X, formerly known as Twitter, @CrapGame13. I tweet about wrestling, arcane references, bad jokes, Today's National Chili Day. Chili shouldn't have beans. I stand by this. Chris is on Instagram at D-O-C-T-O-R.
It should be green or red.
D-O-C-T-O-R _NOV. And just follow the show at Shake Them Ropes. We are part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Podcast for all your niche loves of wrestling. Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast. Good, Bad, the Hungy. I'm thinking of various ones I haven't put over there. But, of course, there's always the flagship with Rich and Joe, who we just started a war with.
And classic archival episodes of Stipulation and Lucha of the Hidden Temple to go back and revisit.
If you can't, I think they might be on the feed. I don't know.
I don't know. Maybe. Yeah. Do you think Rich? Check. I'm not going to check.
No, so I'm telling the listener to check.
Oh, yeah, please. Yeah, yeah. No, definitely. They should.
I do a show on Fight Game Media called The Dynamite Show about 20 or 30 minutes after the show ends. Myself and Paul Ace Fontaine go on thoroughly deconstruct the 2 hours that was Dynamite. We had a fun little show where he referred to Ruby Soho as tattooed Betty Rubble, and now I can't unsee it. You can get that on Fight Game Media's podcasting or over on the YouTubes. Chris is doing a variety of things, including herding cats. He'll tell you about it now.
Yeah, I have 4 cats. They're wonderful. Here's one of them. Oh, hello, Hazy. Hazy wants you to get guitar lessons from Dad. And you can do that by going onto the Instagram and what is that? Oh, messaging him on the Instagram.
Get where guitar can they lessons. Find you?
D-O-C-T-O-R-N-O-V.
_NOV.
_NOV. I have a cat. She's very adorable.
You might be losing DMs because you're not properly plugging your account, sir.
I'm not losing DMs. I don't know where. I don't have a good joke for that.
Yeah, but let's just end it there.
Whatever.
Cheering at pro wrestling shows in Japan is back, and 2023 is already shaping up to be a big year in the history of pro res. That's why you should listen to the Emerald Flow Show. From the Royal Road to the Green Mat, Paul and Gerard take you into the world of All Japan Pro Wrestling and Pro Wrestling NOAH. Not only do we analyze events, but we examine business, who is getting over, what angles are working or not. Occasionally, we take a look at other Japanese promotions like DDT and Zero One. So if you're looking for more coverage of the world of Japanese wrestling, check out the Emerald Flow Show on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network, available on all of your favorite podcast apps.